Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, chapter 8, entitled Manifestation of Brahma from Vishnu, text number 18. Saitam Advicha Tadabjanala.
Saitam Advicha Tadabjanala.
Nadi Viranta Jalam Avivisha.
Nadi Viranta Jalam Avivisha.
Narvakatastat Karanala.
Narvakatastat Karanala.
Nabim Vichinvam Stadavindata Jaha. Saha.
Saha.
He.
He.
Brahma.
Brahma.
Yitam.
Yitam.
In this way.
In this way.
Udviksya.
Udviksya.
Contemplating.
Contemplating.
Ta.
Ta.
That.
That.
Abja.
Abja.
Lotus.
Lotus.
Nala.
Nala.
Stem.
Stem.
Nadivi.
Nadivi.
Pide pipe.
Antajala,
Antajala, within the water,
within the water. Avivesha,
entered into,
entered into.
Na,
na,
not,
not.
Arvagata,
Arvagata,
in spite of going inside,
in spite of going inside.
Tatkaranala,
Tatkaranala,
the stem of the lotus.
Nala,
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 pipe.
Pipe.
Nabim,
Nabim,
of the navel.
Vichinvan,
thinking much of it.
Ta,
that.
Avindata,
understood.
Ajaha,
the self-born.
Self-born.
Translation. Lord Brahma, thus contemplating, entered the water through the channel of the stem of the lotus. But in spite of entering the stem and going nearer to the navel of Vishnu, he could not trace out the root. Purport. By dint of one's personal endeavor, one may go nearer to the Lord. But without the Lord's mercy, one cannot reach the ultimate point. Such understanding of the Lord is possible only by devotional service, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 1855, so Lord Brahma was most intelligent, because it is said that Lord Brahma is the most intelligent living being in the entire universe. So therefore, Lord Brahma thought deeply. He found himself upon this lotus in darkness, and he was deeply contemplating what is the purpose of existence. What is the, in order to find out the purpose, one must find out the root of existence. And therefore, he searched out the root. So ultimately, he was wondering, what is the cause of this lotus flower where I'm residing? Possibly, if I investigate that, I might find out more. So in this way, Lord Brahma traced out the root. And in the same way, we also, if we are looking at our life, we must also trace out the cause. It is stated that everything may have an immediate cause, just like when we are driving and someone smashes into our car, we may say that that person is a useless driver, that is the immediate cause, and that may be true, but there is the ultimate cause, the deeper cause. Why this useless driver of all the millions of cars on the planet just had to hit our car? That everything was ultimately destined, predestined, and that everything was going on by dint of our karma. But things are not merely going on by karma alone, because ultimately this whole arrangement of karma and the laws of material nature is the arrangement of Krishna. So therefore, if we keep on looking cause behind cause, then the ultimate cause is Krishna. And therefore, a devotee is always seeing the ultimate cause, Krishna. And a devotee is realizing that Krishna is personally involved with his devotees. And therefore, whatever happens to us, ultimately we see that somewhere Krishna is involved. Even if something may happen to us due to karma, we know a devotee is receiving a diminished reaction, not the full reaction, but only diminished reaction for whatever sinful activities we have performed. But still, Krishna, he allows that reaction to happen. So ultimately, whatever happens, a devotee is always looking, what is Krishna's purpose? What am I to learn from this? Why is Krishna allowing this to happen in my life? Why is all this going on? And in this way, one can accept fate. We are not, many people in the world cannot accept. When things are nice, yes, but when things are not favorable, it's a big thing to accept. I was looking at some cartoons, and there was a cartoon of a man who had reached heaven, and you saw different clouds, and you saw angels there with wings. And then there was one man on his own cloud in a business suit with a briefcase. And they said, oh, he is still in denial. Right? He is still in denial. He's not really accepting yet that he has died. Right? Yeah? So, many cases we are in denial in life. Whatever is happening to us, we're not accepting. This cannot happen to me. It's not possible that this is happening to me. No, it's not right, it's wrong, it's not just, it's not proper. This should not happen to me. And internally, we are fighting what is happening. We are not accepting our life. But a devotee must learn to accept whatever Krishna sends and to somehow or other take it. Whatever positive or negative thing may occur, we take it. When positive facilities come, we should not become distracted by them, but rather use them in the service of Krishna. And when difficulties come, when somehow or other we get reduced, we simply accept that also. Sometimes we think, but Krishna, I'm doing your work. I'm working for you. So why are you throwing so many hurdles on my path? I'm trying my level best to serve you, and just as everything was nicely arranged, you come and you throw everything upside down. Why? I'm serving you, and everything has become messed up. Why did this happen? I'm simply trying to be a sincere servant, and everything is messed up. Because sometimes we think that the work that we are doing, the service that we are doing for Krishna, is that Krishna depends on it, that Krishna needs us, that if we don't preach, how will this world ever change? If we are not going out and knocking on doors, how will this world change? We think. But Krishna actually does not depend on us. Krishna can very easily, by some little arrangement, make big, big changes. And we see that from time to time. Just like we saw at one point, the fall of communism. Something no one could have ever imagined. We all thought communism would just go on and on and on and on, and never anybody thought that it would fall to pieces so quick. It went very fast at one point. There was some sign of unrest, some sign that it wasn't working so well in Russia. There were some indications, But everyone thought the Kremlin will fix it. Yeah? There was no doubt about it. Yeah? A few more people, a few more labor camps, and everything will work out. And then suddenly, in a very short time, the whole thing began to crumble. So fast, and just finished. So we could clearly see the hand of Krishna. There was no doubt about it. No ordinary cause could have brought such a huge change so quickly. But somehow or other, Krishna interfered. Devotees will see. So, in this way, things can change very radically, very, very fast. And we don't know. We don't know what is happening. So we must simply accept it. Acceptance of changes. And big changes come. And they don't depend on us. We didn't do it. We didn't overthrow. This movement didn't overthrow the communist system by powerful preaching. It just happened. And suddenly, all these devotees in Russia, right? Unlimited devotees in all these former communist countries, devotees like everywhere. Huh? All the preachers from Western Europe went to Eastern Europe. And they got 10 times as many people in every program. Huh? You were in Western Europe, yeah, you get 30, 40 people. You know, you go Eastern Europe, 300, 400 people. Right? You can't. Right? No problem. Like that, somehow or other, suddenly things took off. And everyone is sort of, yeah, we got used to it now. Now it's normal. And now things are also changing in the East. But the point is that no one expected this. No one did it. Right? It just happened. Prabhupada also said like that. He said, sometimes I'm thinking, why did this miracle happen to me? That Krishna consciousness spread like that. So, Prabhupada never took the credit. He always gave the credit to Krishna and to his spiritual master. Although, naturally, we give him so much credit because we see he worked not only tirelessly, but with so much determination. But still, in Krishna consciousness, there are always these two factors. The factor of our personal endeavor and the factor of the mercy of Krishna. And these two must come together. And ultimately, without the mercy of Krishna, nothing can go on. The mercy of Krishna is more important than our endeavor. Because our endeavor may be there, but result may not come. We can be businessmen, and we can be successful, and we can think that this depends on my intelligence. This depends on my ability, and that's why I'm making a lot of money. Yeah. It's not like that at all. Yeah. People that are much more intelligent and much more expert, they don't make a cracker. They don't make a dime. Right? Because the karma is not favorable. Because ultimately it is not not happening in that way. When Krishna is pleased, there is result, actually. And when Krishna is not pleased, no result. Of course, for the materialist, Krishna is placing these things under the law of karma. But even the law of karma is not impersonal, because ultimately the law of karma is going on by Krishna's design. So there's also an element of when Krishna is pleased, the results come. Ultimately, all results depend on Krishna. But for the devotee, because the devotee personally turns to Krishna, Krishna will personally turn to his devotee. The old story of the sparrow looking for the lost egg in the ocean, and the ocean not returning the egg, and then the sparrow vowing to drink the entire ocean, is illustrating our position in spiritual life. It shows the ratio between the endeavor and the mercy. We can see that what could the sparrow do? Drink a few drops. And then then Garuda, of course, came because he was moved by the determination of this sparrow. And then Garuda said, I will drink the ocean, which was very feasible. So in the same way, we make our little endeavors in devotional service. And then we depend on Krishna. And this counts both in our own personal spiritual life as well as in our preaching. In our preaching, how will we ever take over the world? This year, in my Vyasa Puja offering to Srila Prabhupada, which I just wrote a few days ago, I was thinking about this, how in the 70s and 80s, taking over the world was the meditation. And regularly we would hear in classes that Srila Prabhupada said that if we were pure devotees, we could take over the world in 18 days. And that was like sort of something on the regular repertoire. You heard it once or twice a week. And that was the mood, you know. I mean, so what are we waiting for? Let's just become pure devotees and take over the world. But now I think more like the sparrow in Garuda. And I think, are we ever going to take over the world? The few books that we distribute, here and there, a few books, the few lectures that I give. I travel around the world from one country to another, but I don't really feel that I'm conquering these countries. I'm just barely touching them. I'm lucky if I make it to some country once or twice a year, and I already think, wow, phew, that's a lot of endeavor. Two times, three times, I do really well. Three times in one country, big. I get special attention. It is like that. Am I conquering these countries? Big world preacher is marching on, conquering all the corners of the world. Not exactly like that. It's sort of, I'm really the little sparrow hoping that Garuda will come. I mean, I know I can't do it. I'm hoping that Krishna will come and that he will make it happen somehow or other. That he will do something, some little adjustment. For example, just a little bit of disturbance which makes the American economy collapse. Something like that. I thought in the year 2000 that now the fun will begin. I was excited. Everyone was talking Y2K. And well, I checked it out a bit with computer programmers and they said, indeed, it is a big thing. It's not easy. So I thought, what shall I do? Different devotees were getting serious. Some were digging themselves in farms and getting huge quantities of boga, right? I mean, huge quantities of rice and chickpeas and dals, garbanzos. In Spain, on the farm, they're still eating from the Y2K. It was the greatest thing that ever happened because they stocked up enough food for years. It saved us a fortune. So that said, it was very good. Probably saved the Spanish farm. Los garbanzos. See, so I thought, what shall I do? Dig in a farm? I thought, no, that's too boring. I should be out in the front. So I said, let me go to Sydney, where there's a huge festival, and let me just be in the middle of the city and be there. I must admit, I did slip a torchlight in my pocket as I went out that night, just in case the electricity would go off. I thought, it's always useful to have a torch when everything goes crazy. Right? And then we went into a big kirtan in Australia. And Australia was the interesting place Because the date line is, and that's just next to Australia, and the way it's arranged in the world is that Australia gets it first, right? Like Australia is about 8 hours ahead of us here, so the date changes 8 hours earlier. So Y2K was hitting first in Australia. So we were there waiting for it to see what it did. Well, it was a bomb, and just a little flag came out that said poof. Yeah? That was about it. Yeah? It was a big disappointment. I mean, some people were very happy, but not me. I felt very disappointed, and I thought, oh gosh, I thought that the whole thing might just collapse and the exciting times might begin. Yeah? No more petrol. Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, maybe about 10 years old, somehow or other Holland spoke out very strongly in support of Israel, and we were punished by the Arabs, right? And they closed the petrol tap, right? And we didn't get any oil, no petrol for some time, right? So they stocked up all the petrol, and then they had to save petrol, so they arranged it that on Sunday, no driving on Sunday, nothing, no cars out on Sunday. We thought it was the greatest thing that ever happened. Roller skating on the highways, you know. We were racing on our roller skates on the highways, and I thought it was fantastic, those days without cars. Right? And I still would think it would be great if something happened. And if something like that would happen, then just see how Krishna consciousness will suddenly be very interesting when the whole world starts to fall to pieces. Yeah? When the internet is down and stays down. Yeah? Just see what happens then. People start talking again. When all the MP3 players, right, suddenly the batteries run dead. And no more MP3, nothing. No? Just what do? When the TV doesn't work. Yeah? What are you going to do? Yeah? Suddenly, right? Kirtan may become an option. So like that, that we will see, yeah, that just a little bit of adjustment of Krishna and everything becomes so favorable. So Srila Prabhupada many times pointed that out, and he said that there will be a time when people will come in the thousands. That not one person will join. Now, you know, there's a whole group of devotees, and wow, here's a new bhakta joining, and everyone is like, I don't talk, you know. we got one, right? They're all very excited, somebody joined, you know. There are all kinds of rules. Not everybody is allowed to preach to this new devotee. These are the temple standards. Only certain devotees, you know, like in positions, they can preach. You know, everyone is holding back. You know, a little preaching on the side, yeah, some sneaky preaching. Then, because, yeah, a new bhakta, wow, it's a big thing. Yeah? But Prabhupada said, the time will come when they'll come by the thousands. By the thousands they will come. And then we have to be ready. Right? Because then everyone will have to take 1,000 new devotees and train them up. So this is the future, and it may well happen. Right? And then each of you here today who will then be the veterans, right? You'll be, if you've been in Vrindavan, that will be a big thing. Right? When there's no more planes, anybody who has been in Vrindavan in a lifetime, that's big. Just like the Muslims, right? They put, when they go to Mecca, it's called the Hajj, right? And if you have been to Mecca, then you are a Haji, you know? You're a Haji. You've been to Mecca, right? And they put it in front of their name, you know? Haji, Yusuf, Ahmed, Allah, and so many things, and then whatever. Their names are. But they put a haji, so we put vraji. We put vraji in front of our name, you know, and everyone will know. Oh, been in Vrindavan. Please tell us, what is Vrindavan like? And although you've been there only one time and had a Delhi belly and don't know very much, still, you become an authority. You become an authority, an acharya on Vrindavan. It will be like that. All these things will become very valuable. At that time, everything suddenly becomes much different. At that time, you cannot just have so many books. It will be back to handwritten copies. You know, like you engage a brahmana, and this brahmana will write a handwritten copy, and you offer it on the full moon as a gift to someone. That's how it was at the time of Lord Chaitanya. So it's quite amazing if we look at that for a moment, if we just think for a moment, bye-bye modern world. And what would it be like? So Krishna can arrange it. I'm just painting one scenario of what Krishna could do. And Krishna, of course, may not necessarily do what Kadambakanana Swami is predicting. Rather, Krishna may surprise us all and do something really far out. And sometimes movie makers show us these kind of things, right? The Godzilla or something like that, right? People are not interested in God these days. They're interested in Godzilla. It's funny that they borrowed the name God. They had to put some God there, right? Godzilla. And I happen to have seen the Godzilla movie on a plane some years back. And basically it was something like, due to radioactive tests, mutations came about and some lizards became very, very big, and they turned into huge dinosaurs. And these dinosaurs started to run all over the planet, and they went to New York, right? And they were in New York, and it turned out that this one Godzilla, this huge monster dinosaur, was in New York breaking buildings, breaking bridges, breaking the Brooklyn Bridge, which is very big. Anyway, in the end, they found out that the Godzilla was a female and pregnant, and they had unlimited Godzillas all over, little Godzillas everywhere. Right? So it looked like the Godzillas were going to take over from the human beings. So many movies like that. Many, many movies. Movies about the weather, how the weather pattern changes, and how a new ice age begins. Because we remember that they found these mammoths, right? These huge prehistoric elephants frozen in the ice while they were still grazing, right? Still grazing, still fresh grass in their mouth, right? So the point was that if the mammoths would have been walking on the ice, how could there have been fresh grass in their mouths? So the whole point was, there was fresh grass and they were eating it, and then suddenly they were in the ice. So therefore the theory is that the temperature went down so quick that while they were walking on the lawn, having like nice grass, suddenly everything became ice and they froze on the spot. So they have movies where it happens again. It happens again, and a huge portion of the world just freezes and everything in it. So, but a few survivors in the southern part of the world, and so on, like that. Whatever they come up with, right? Many movies are about an act of God. An act of God which will change the world. And well, in one sense, it probably will have to take an act of God. because I don't know if we're going to do it. And we're all thinking, oh, it's so hard to get out of bed, and how do I, and it's so difficult to put on my shoes and everything, and do I really have to change the world as well? Oh, gosh. Can't we just have a nice, peaceful life somewhere? Can't we have one cow and like a little sunshine, you know, like a nice little life? And isn't that good enough? Following the principles and everything. Isn't it enough? Do we have to do more than just be Krishna conscious ourselves? We already think, and it's not so easy. So changing the world these days, we think, we'll try. We'll give it a try. We're not giving up. Oh no. The missionary spirit is not dead. We're going forward. Still preaching, whatever. But we know that we may need a little help from Krishna. And that probably the help of Krishna is going to do more than what we can do alone. The same principle applies to our own endeavors in our own personal spiritual advancement. Because the false ego, it seems to be the most difficult thing to get rid of. How to get rid of a false ego? It seems to be something that hounds us, something that just stays with us no matter what we do. And somehow or other, this false ego is so strong that will we ever conquer it? And we realize also more and more, it's not going to be us. In the beginning, in spiritual life, we have a lot of things in our heads, because in the beginning, we decide if we are going to follow one of the regulative principles. And we do it. Yes. Kick out all these impurities. No more. Vegetarian from now on. Strict. Read the E numbers and everything. Even veggie toothpaste. And then it goes on. Right? So, four regulative principles. 16 rounds, all tangible results, right? We are doing, and we are making headway. Have you read the Bhagavad Gita? Yes, the whole thing. Have you read? Have you read Bhagavatam? Yes, I have, right? And in this way, and now Chaitanya Charitamrita, going through it fast, right? So in this way, the advancement is very measurable, very measurable. We're increasing everything, reading the books, accepting principles, rounds, doing fasts on particular days. Everything is there. Very measurable things we are doing. And we can see our life is radically changing. Yes. And then, when all that's done, and then you take initiation. And yes, the great day has come. Ah, yes, it's wonderful. Now, everything has changed. I'll never be the same. Yes, you'll never be the same. And still, and then, boom, second one as well. Wow. And then you've got everything. You got it all, basically, right? You got all the initiations. And then what's left? What's the next goal? What's left? Read all the books, right? Got all the initiations, chanting all the rounds and everything. There's no more glory, right? Got all the glory now. And now, all that's left is to just develop it. And then, you know, like, as we are situated within all that, we encounter that the material contamination is so subtle and so difficult to catch. It's there somewhere, but where is it? The greed and the lust and everything is in there, but it's like it's everywhere and nowhere. It's difficult to catch it when it comes to the subtle plane. Once we've thrown out the gross forms of it, it's like, what do you do if you have greed in your heart but you're not acting in a greedy way? You're no longer going for it. And then, but it's still there inside. And what do you do then? It's like we can turn away from the world, but the world is still inside of us. The attachment to the world is still inside of us. So this is the difficulty. So to conquer our false ego. So there it's the same thing. We endeavor and we endeavor. And even after we've gone through all the externals, all the rituals, and we wear the uniform and everything, and all the attributes, and we just go for it, the whole thing. In the end, we realize everything I've done. We become serious, and we say, "All right, I realize it's going to take a sacrifice. If I really want to become advanced, I will have to make a sacrifice." So a sacrifice means I will have to do something special for Krishna, something extraordinary, something that's not easy for me, but I'll do it for Krishna. I'll make the sacrifice. And I will not do what I would like, but I will do what is good for Krishna. And my spiritual master and so on, I'll do whatever they want. I'll make the sacrifice. Very good, very good. Bravo, bravo. Flowers, showers, and all that. The demigods are now smiling upon you. Bliss, bravo, bravo. But yet, even those demigods that are showering flowers upon us, even they have personal desires. Even their bhakti is mixed. They still have a personal agenda. So even those flowers are also not free. They're also mixed, coming from the mixed hand of the mixed heart of a demigod. So what are we going to do? So this is the other side. And we realize, as time goes by, we realize that everything we've done, is it enough? Is it enough? And we realize more and more how dependent we are, how much we depend on the mercy. And we pray to Krishna, "Please, Krishna, please somehow or other help me." And we think, "Is he listening? Is he really listening to my prayers?" I'm not so sure. Praying like anything, "Krishna, please help me. Please purify me." But is he hearing me? Is he paying attention to me? I don't know. We all think like this. So therefore, we have to think just like Advaita Acharya. Advaita Acharya was in the same position. Advaita Acharya was worshipping Lord Chaitanya with in different ways, and he was trying to make the Lord appear. But he was not sure. Is the Lord hearing me? Is he hearing my prayers? Is he really coming down to this earth or not? When will it happen? How long do we have to wait? So then Advaita Acharya one day read about a trick. He read in the scriptures that if you offer the Lord simply a tulsi leaf and some Ganga water, a leaf and some water, simple offering, it said actually a leaf and water, then I cannot repay that. I have nothing in the world that is as valuable as that. Then the Lord will offer in exchange himself, because he has nothing else. So Advaita Acharya, when he read that, he thought, "I've got it. I found it. I found a trick by which I can force him." So in other words, Advaita Acharya was not just worshipping, but he was also approaching it with intelligence. So we want the mercy of the Lord. How can we approach it with intelligence? Even if we have done everything, we have become full-on Hare Krishnas. It is really funny. I remember the day that I sort of joined, and in the first week, I was walking with a bald head and a dhoti. And anybody who saw me was thinking, there goes a total Hare Krishna, right? But I wasn't thinking of myself like that. I was more thinking of myself like a very insecure person who was thinking, well, I'm trying it out, but if I don't like it, I'll just leave. I was thinking. That's what I was thinking. I was thinking, well, I'll check it out, but if somehow or other I don't like it, I'll just go. But anyone who would see me was thinking, this guy is a 100% brainwashed Hare Krishna. Yeah? He's like totally lost. So even if we've done it, right, everything, put it all on the thing, a man in a dress with a bald head and whatnot, right, for life. Yeah? Be a freak for life, basically. Right? It's okay to be a freak when you're 20, just to shock people, you know, just to see how they respond, and to like sort of make them talk about you. No, look at that. Or, so that's fun. But for a whole life, I mean, basically, freak for life. Right? The word freak means a strange, awkward personality. Something that you would want to maybe place on the funny farm. Something strange, right? But we're doing one lifetime strange, right? Basically. To be strange for Krishna. We've chosen for that. So we make sacrifice. And we did so many things. We got up early in the morning at an impossible time. We took baths in water of a temperature which was absolutely unbearable, right? But somehow or other, we did it. We ate more than any human being can eat. Right? We did all these things in sacrifice. Right? In sacrifice. Will our sacrifice be enough? That is the question. Will it be enough for Krishna to give us the mercy? So, is there a trick? There is one. There is one. The trick that is there, that if our service is maybe not enough, and probably it's not enough, right? Then the thing is that we go for the blessings of the great Vaishnavas. And basically of all the Vaishnavas. And the more blessings we collect from Vaishnavas, right, the more we can add that, you know, because the Vaishnavas have credit with Krishna, and therefore Krishna will be inclined our way. Right? So, of course, to get the blessings from the Vaishnavas, you can do different things. You can go up to a Vaishnava and say, Prabhu, please bless me. And you may get something like less. Please bless me. Yes, less. That's very nice. And that is a blessing, yeah? Because if a Vaishnava said less, that's not to be underestimated. Now, anybody says less to me, I'll be very happy. But still, the real way to get the blessings of a Vaishnava is to capture the heart of the Vaishnava. When a Vaishnava deep in his heart feels that, yes, this is a very nice person. Yeah? And when the Vaishnava completely feels like full of appreciation for someone, right, then even you may be a rat. Right? Even although you may be full of rat-like qualities, if somehow or other the Vaishnava has developed appreciation in his heart for you, well, then Krishna will also overlook all our faults. So this is the trick. So you don't get the heart of the Vaishnava from nothing. Yeah? You have to really go out of your way to conquer the heart of the Vaishnava. So you have to really serve the Vaishnava in such a way that you just melt the heart. And once you do, yeah, then the mercy starts to rain down. Yeah. And that is really the system. That is the trick. by which we can add on to whatever mercy we may already have attracted by our own sacrifice, but how we can increase the power of our own sacrifice. And with time we begin to realize more and more how much we need it. How much we need it. How much do we need to go out of our way to get the blessings of the Vaishnavas, to conquer their heart by serving them. It is not an easy thing. It's something I can speak about, and it's another level of doing it. Right? It's something I'm trying to do. It's something I'm trying to learn how to do. Right? It's something I have to develop. It's something I meditate upon, and something I try to remember. Because in this way, I hope to grow and to conquer the hearts of many Vaishnavas, because I know that may make up for the little bit of benefit that I may get for my endeavors, and that the mercy of the Vaishnavas can attract the mercy of Krishna. Okay, I think that's enough.
So I heard that every service we do for Krishna is equal in his eyes.
Yes.
And yet he says that the one that preaches for me is the most dear to me.
Yeah. That is true. Every service is equal in the eyes of Krishna. But the one who preaches is most dear to me. Because whatever service we do is equal, is transcendental. Whether we clean this floor, or whether we are out on the street distributing books. Equal. And in fact, equal opportunity. The one who is putting more endeavor to really make this floor super, super clean can get more mercy than the one who is out on the street but reluctantly sort of there, right? So it's not just where we are, but it's how what we give in the service. But still greater than the one who is cleaning the floor. Imagine someone is cleaning the floor and doing it every day. The real floor cleaner, right, at one point begins to engage others in cleaning the floor. Right? And that's a greater floor cleaner than the one who's just doing it alone. Right? So in every service we can preach by engaging others. And the more we've become expert at a service, the more we can really engage others in that service. If you are the expert floor cleaner, you can be the floor acharya. You can say, that was very nice, but now, see, I have this little brush there for the grooves in between the tiles. Don't forget the edges and so many things, little tricks, whatever. You can become a teacher. Because the principle of this movement is that everyone, regardless of what service you do, you have to become a teacher. You have to teach others now how to do it. So we perfect an art, a particular service. You know, it's like not so easy to do things right for Krishna. The first time, my first service was cleaning a room. Okay, it was a room used for the lunch program. There was very little time, so they said, quickly clean up the room and then bring the prasad. So I swept it a little bit and then lifted the carpet and then 1, 2, 3 put things under the dust under the carpet. And then I thought, for Krishna I can't really do this anymore. So I lifted up the carpet and took the dust again from under the carpet. Right? So it's an art to do things for Krishna. To cook for Krishna is an art. At first we speculate, but then we learn. And at one point, some cooks they learn the preparations that are described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, right? That Krishna is taking and so on. They learn these preps properly, how to cook. It's an art. Right? So the more you go in a service, you automatically emerge like a teacher. It happens automatically. Right? And that's what should happen. So we should all become preachers. Everyone. Doesn't matter what service it is. It's not that you have a few book distributors and they are the preachers and everyone else is just sort of in, well, you know, also doing devotional service. And it's nice because it's transcendental, but it's not as dear to Krishna as the rest. No. Everyone can preach. And everyone should preach. So preaching means somehow or other engage others in devotional service. That is preaching. And then, as they're engaging, teach them how to perfect it. Help them, support them.
One question. I want to ask you about the balance. You said that the big things makes the Krishna knows, okay, we have the knowledge that we are so tiny persons and Krishna is the big one and he makes the changes, so okay, it's in Krishna's hand, we must nothing do, on the other side, okay, I must do everything, and I must do everything in a business, because then nothing's running, and I must preach, and I must distribute the whole world, all books. What is the balance between the nothing to do, okay, everything is done by sure. Krishna, and okay, I'm the super yeah. doer.
Yeah, I spoke, of course, about the need for endeavor, and that both are there. So the position to do nothing, and to just wait for Krishna to change the world, that way we'll miss out on mercy. Krishna may change the world, but we may be the exception in the whole world that he doesn't change. Yeah. So now we have to make the endeavor to be sure that we are part of it, you know, when he changes the world. So then the question is, so under endeavor is out of the question. Under endeavor just means missing the boat. So then we speak about over endeavor. Over endeavor means that we begin to harm our devotional service. That we begin to harm our hearing and chanting, which is the core of our devotional service, the essence. It must be strong. If we get so busy that we have no more energy for good hearing and chanting, then we know that we got ourselves a bit too busy. Yeah? We must always keep, whatever it is, whether you are a big preacher living in a temple, whether we have a danda, or whether we are businessmen and have like a business, it's the same thing. We have to watch for over-endeavor. And by nature, we may incline to that. Some people by nature are lazy, so they are the under-endeavorers. Yeah? And some are just inclined to push a bit too hard. Like me, you know, I've struggled my whole life to tell myself, slow down, you know, don't push too much. Right? I mean, you really don't have to do all this. But I also do it to myself, that I push too hard and then I have no energy left for hearing and chanting, or no time left for hearing and chanting. No good. I'm telling myself no. No good, KK Swami. No good. No good. You must take time. So I'm making some serious plans about that. So we must make plans in spiritual life. To be balanced means the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness means to not just do everything completely spontaneous, but to work by a plan. Yeah? And to have a structure. And in that plan, we must protect hearing and chanting. Otherwise, over and down. 9 o'clock on the dot. Perfect. then we'll finish. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.